This is VOA News. I'm Michael Brown reporting by remote. U.S. President Joe Biden and Vice President Kamala Harris are scheduled to travel to Atlanta Friday to meet with Asian American leaders following the killing of 8 people, 6 who are women of Asian descent. A white man and a white woman were also killed in the shooting on Tuesday. Police say a 9th victim remains hospitalized. President Biden ordered flags flown at half-staff through March 22nd to honor the victims. The Georgia man charged in the shootings waived his right to appear before a magistrate on Thursday, doing so in writing through his attorney, according to the Washington Post. Police arrested 21-year-old Robert Aaron Long after the Atlanta area shootings late Tuesday, more than 100 miles away from the killings. Authorities say when police arrested him, Long claimed that his sex addiction led him to the attacks because he viewed massage parlors as a temptation he wanted to eliminate. President Biden says that his administration's goal of vaccinating 100 million Americans before the first 100 days of his administration will be reached as of Friday. Biden said a combination of hard work and putting the nation on a war footing against the coronavirus has led to the success. The president said that while this is a time for optimism, it is not a time to be careless. He continued to urge Americans to wash their hands, socially distance, and to wear a mask to prevent transmission of the COVID-19 virus. For details on much more news, we invite you to join us at our website. That is voanews.com. Also on the VOA mobile app. Via remote, this is VOA News. The European Union's Drug Regulatory Agency says experts have concluded the AstraZeneca vaccine is not linked to an overall increase in the risk of blood clots and that the benefits of use outweigh the risk. The finding from the European Medicines Agency could open the way for European countries that have suspended the use of the vaccine over the past week to resume dispensing the shots. Emmer Cooks, the executive director of the EMEA, said the AstraZeneca vaccine is safe and effective. Several countries, including France, Germany, and Italy, that had suspended use of the vaccine now say they will resume giving the shots on Friday. The Biden administration resumed its first high-level face-to-face talks with key rival China on Friday in Alaska. The United States and China leveled sharp rebukes Thursday of each other's policies in the first meeting with deeply strained relations of the two global rivals on rare public display during the meeting's opening session in Alaska. The United States, which quickly accused China of grandstanding and violating the meeting's protocol, had been looking for a change in behavior from China, which had earlier this year expressed hope for a reset to sour relations. Before taking office, President Biden had been attacked by Republicans who feared his administration would take a soft approach with China. While much of Biden's China policy is still being formulated, including how to handle the tariffs on Chinese goods implemented under the previous administration, so far, his administration has placed a stronger emphasis on democratic values and allegations of human rights abuses by China. Airlines and others in the travel industry are endorsing vaccine passports to boost the pandemic-depressed travel industry, and authorities in Europe could embrace the idea quickly enough for the peak summer vacation season. Technology companies and travel-related trade groups are developing and testing various versions of the passports. It is not clear, however, whether any of the ones under development will be accepted broadly around the world, and the result could be confusion among travelers and disappointment for the travel industry. For details on much more news, we invite you to join us at our website. That is voanews.com, also on the VOA mobile app. I'm Michael Brown reporting by remote, VOA News. We'll be right back.
morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Barte in Washington. Today is Friday, March 19, and here are some of the stories we are covering. Africa reacts with mixed emotions to the death of Tanzanian President John Magufuli.
One of the key issues I think that's going to come up will be whether or not, in the wake of his passing, Tanzania will move back onto a kind of democratizing pathway after what's often perceived to be a significant authoritarian turn under his leadership.
We'll tell you about the woman soon to be the next president of Tanzania. Activists react to corruption not guilty verdict of Enid and Shell Oil Company. Central African states say COVID-19 and conflicts halt integration. And Kenyans take AstraZeneca COVID vaccine with apprehension.
I got the jab of the Oxford AstraZeneca yesterday afternoon, and by evening or late in the night, I could barely lift anything using my left hand. But I'd rather have all these other side effects than get COVID.
And political graffiti and the recent protests in Senegal, those stories plus Samson O'Malley Sports are coming up on Daybreak Africa. A great son of Africa, an independent leader who refused to bow to foreign powers, an anti-corruption crusader, a COVID-19 denier, a budding authoritarian. Across the African continent and the world, reactions are streaming in, both loving and searing, over the announcement of the death of Tanzanian President John Magufuli. Viewers Anita Powell reports from Johannesburg.
South African President Cyril Ramaphosa expressed his deep sadness in a short statement Thursday morning, following word that Tanzanian President John Magufuli had died. South Africa is united in grief with the government and people of Tanzania, he said. Magufuli was only 61, and according to Tanzanian officials, he died of heart disease. Magufuli had not appeared in public for more than 2 weeks, and opposition politicians claimed he had contracted COVID-19, the disease caused by the coronavirus. Magufuli stood alone among African leaders in denying the existence of the virus in his country. Last June, he declared his coastal nation free of the virus, a claim many African health experts questioned. As one of the continent's most respected leaders, Ramaphosa set the tone for much of the comment coming from the continent in the wake of Magufuli's death. Leaders and luminaries from Nigeria, Uganda, Somalia, Zimbabwe, and former African power Britain were quick to issue statements mourning Magufuli. Ghana-based Safo Abebrese heads the Coalition of Supporters Unions of Africa, which promotes African cooperation. He says Magufuli's reach extended across the continent.
It is not just the citizens of Tanzania that he ruled over. We all received the news with a lot of sadness, especially because we all know him as a great son of the continent of Africa. And, you know, he is one of the few leaders that believed in his continent's abilities, despised and acted against corruption, and chose to be a true African statesman.
Activist Daniel Mabonu, who heads the Global Pan-Africanism Network, described Magufuli's death as a terrible blow.
He has demonstrated selfless leadership and people-driven leadership that continues to inspire the young generation, and utilizing the natural resources that Tanzania has, he has been able to develop Tanzania from a third world country into a middle class economy. Within just a short period of time, he has built the railways utilizing Tanzanians' taxpayers' money without begging for foreign aid. And these are the kind of leaders who we need in Africa.
But Magufuli was not without his critics. On Thursday, opposition leaders and analysts from the continent and beyond called him out for his increasingly tight grip on civil liberties and the media in Tanzania, and on his denial of the pandemic. Nick Cheeseman, professor of democracy at the University of Birmingham, says Magufuli's legacy is complicated.
On the one hand, there will be those who side him as a transformational leader who reduced corruption and strengthen the Tanzanian state and government. On the other hand, there are going to be people who point to his legacy on COVID-19 and suggest that ordinary Tanzanians died when they didn't have to as a result of his neglect. One of the key issues I think that's going to come up will be whether or not, in the wake of his passing, Tanzania will move back onto a kind of democratizing pathway after what's often perceived to be a significant authoritarian turn under his leadership.
Cheeseman says it is more likely that Tanzania will see more continuity than change. But perhaps the most telling reaction from outside of East Africa has come from the U.S. State Department, which released a short, terse statement saying little about the man and ending with the sentences, "The United States remains committed to continuing to support Tanzanians as they advocate for respect for human rights and fundamental freedoms and work to combat the COVID-19 pandemic. We hope that Tanzania can move forward on a democratic and prosperous path." The U.S. is the largest bilateral donor to Tanzania. Those condolences are a powerful contrast to a message last week, marking the death of South African ceremonial leader King Goodwill Zwelithini, in which officials said, "We mourn the loss of King Zwelithini and our thoughts remain with royal family and all who mourn him." Magufuli's death elicited the following response: "We extend our condolences to Tanzanians mourning the passing of President John Pombe Magufuli." Anita Powell, VOA News, Johannesburg.
As Tanzanians and the world mourn the sudden death of President John Magufuli, the country is also getting ready to inaugurate its first female president, Vice President Samia Suluhu Hassan. The 61-year-old Hassan will complete President Magufuli's second five-year term, which is expected to conclude in 2025. So, who is Suluhu Hassan? I put that question to Eid Uwesu, VOA Swahili language reporter in the Tanzanian capital, Dar es Salaam.
Samia Suluhu Hassan was born in 1960 in Unguja, Zanzibar. She went for primary and secondary education in Zanzibar, and later on she attended various colleges until she admitted to University of Southern New Hampshire in United States of America for her master's degree. She has been in Tanzanian politics since 2000, where she was appointed a member of the House of Representatives in Zanzibar, but later held various positions in the revolutionary government of Zanzibar, including the Minister for Gender and Social Welfare, and then reappointed as the Minister for Tourism and Trade. President Jakaya Kikwete, in his tenure, appointed Samia Suluhu Hassan as her Minister for Union Affairs until 2015, when she was nominated by Magufuli as his running mate in Tanzania's general election.
Is the post of Vice President in Tanzania an elected position, or was Suluhu chosen by President Magufuli?
According to Tanzania Constitution, Vice President is chosen by the presidential candidate. So in 2015, the ruling party CCM nominated late John Magufuli for the post. And then he chose Samia as his running mate.
Do you think the administration of Suluhu would be different from that of President Magufuli, especially when the machinery of the ruling Chama cha Mapinduzi party is controlled by Magufuli ala?
I hope it's going to be different, definitely, since when the new president sworn in usually tends to put his ally so that his or her job be smoothly coordinated. So it's likely will be a difference between two governments, though the vice versa is also possible, since she might want to keep the Magufuli allies if they coordinated in the styles of leadership.
When will Suluhu be sworn in, or has she already been sworn in as president?
The issue of swearing in of the president designated has not been made public yet by the government, and there has been no official statement on it, although reports suggest that in the near future, Prime Minister Kassim Majaliwa will address the nation and will probably explain when Samia Suluhu will be sworn in as president of Tanzania.
Generally, what is the reaction of Tanzanians to the passing of their president, John Pombe Magufuli?
Such tragedy didn't happen before for a president to die during his or her leadership. So most of Tanzanians are still in shock because they did not expect to receive the news of the president's death, especially considering a few days ago officials denied report of President Magufuli's illness, but suddenly they received reports of death, so there is still a state of shock for many Tanzanians.
That was VOA Swahili language reporter E. Uwesu speaking with us from the Tanzanian capital, Dar es Salaam. At least 43 healthcare workers who received the AstraZeneca vaccine in Kenya have developed side effects a few days later, according to Chibanzi Mwachonda, acting secretary general of the Kenya Medical Practitioners, Pharmacists and Dentists Union. As Maureen Ojiambo reports from Milwaukee, USA, the African Union says African countries should continue using the AstraZeneca vaccine because the benefits outweigh the risks.
The acquired COVID-19 vaccine that is being given to frontline workers have had the debate heated in Kenya, most of the health workers reporting side effects that have seen some health workers take days off due to the AstraZeneca jab effects. Others are hesitant to take the vaccine. Former Chief Executive Officer, Kenya Medical Association, Dr. Elizabeth Wala from the Aga Khan Foundation, got the jab 3 days ago. She says she experienced the expected side effects and that these side effects vary from person to person.
Apart from the pain that I got a mild headache today. The thing is, people react different. For all pharmaceutical products, there is a general expectation of reactions that may happen based on what they have observed in clinical trials, in experiments.
Despite the side effects reported in many countries, including some European countries, that raised concerns over the risk of blood clots, the African Union has insisted that African countries must continue immunizing its people with the AstraZeneca vaccine. Dr. Wala says some health officers claiming the vaccine has transmitted the virus to them is a wrong allegation and that they might have been positive before they got the jab.
One getting a positive test from after vaccination is not as a result of the vaccine, because none of the vaccines have a live virus in them. It's very possible for one to have been exposed before or around the time of the vaccination.
The World Health Organization is encouraging countries to continue with the vaccination campaign so as to protect people from mutations producing more dangerous variants of the virus. Brian Okendo is a Kenya Revenue Authority officer who got the jab voluntarily, and he says the vaccine made him sick, but he does not regret taking the step.
I got the jab of the Oxford AstraZeneca yesterday afternoon, and by evening or late in the night, I could barely lift anything using my left hand. The worst was fever and sweat all over throughout the night. But I'd rather have all these other side effects than get COVID.
Responding to claims from the countries using their vaccines, the AstraZeneca said that in its review of safety data of more than 17 million people in the United Kingdom and the European Union who got the vaccine, had shown that there is no evidence of an increased risk of blood clots. Reporting for VOA's Daybreak Africa, I am Maureen Ojiambo in Milwaukee, USA.
You are listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Friday, March 19. The Central African Economic and Monetary Community, CEMAC, says armed conflict and the coronavirus pandemic have seriously damaged the economies of the six member countries and put a halt to regional integration. The economic bloc, one of the least developed on the African continent, marked its 27th anniversary this week in Cameroon. Moki Edwin Kinzeka reports from Yaoundé.
The anthem of the Central African Economic and Monetary Community is played Wednesday at Cameroon's Ministry of the Economy and Finance as CEMAC marked its 27th anniversary. But the celebration was subdued as the Six Nation Trading Bloc issued a press release saying conflict and the coronavirus pandemic had damaged its economies and stopped integration. Pandemic restrictions meant very few people were invited to mark CEMAC Day. Instead, the member states Cameroon, the Central African Republic, Chad, Equatorial Guinea, Gabon, and the Republic of Congo held a virtual conference. President of Cameroon's Economic and Social Council, Ayang Luc, read a message from CEMAC chairperson and President of Cameroon, Paul Biya.
Peuple du Cameroun, de la Centrafrique, du Congo, du Gabon.
He says people of Cameroon, the CAR, Congo, Gabon, Equatorial Guinea and Chad should not be discouraged by security and health challenges that countries are facing. Luke says CEMAC is encouraging all its members never to relent in efforts to preserve and promote integration as the only collective way out of poverty and underdevelopment. He says with commitment and determination, COVID-19 will be defeated and peace will return to all CEMAC member states suffering from armed conflicts. Years-long insurgencies have plagued Cameroon, the CAR, and Chad. Although nearly three decades old, the CEMAC trade bloc is comprised of some of Africa's least developed countries, which have struggled during the pandemic. African Development Bank economist George Meka Abesolu says it will be difficult for Central African states to reach their goal of becoming emerging economies by 2035.
Il y aura toujours un décalage entre les objectifs arrêtés.
He says with the coronavirus pandemic crippling economies and several armed conflicts disturbing the peace, it is very difficult for CEMAC member states to develop. Moki Edwin Kinzeka for VOA News, Yaoundé, Cameroon.
This week, an Italian court in Milan found Italian oil and gas giant Eni and Shell Oil Company not guilty of corruption relating to the purchase of a Nigerian oil field. According to Global Witness, the two companies had been on trial since 2018 for purchasing in 2011 an offshore Nigerian oil field. They paid $1.3 billion for the license to explore the field. $1.1 billion of the amount was to be paid to Malabu Oil and Gas, a company controlled by then Nigeria's oil minister, Dan Etete. In reality, Etete awarded his own company the license while still in government. Barnaby Pace, a senior campaigner at Global Witness, says NGOs and activists are disappointed and outraged by the acquittal of two of the world's biggest polluters. He says the groups are urging the Milan prosecutor's office to consider appealing the ruling.
So today's legal verdict is a disappointment, but we're still very much committed to ensuring accountability in the fossil fuel industry, and we really urge the Milan prosecutor's office to consider all options for an appeal. We'll still have to wait on the details of how judges reached this ruling, but obviously this verdict shows how difficult it is to hold the fossil fuel industry to account.
You said that you hope that this ruling does not result to going back to business as usual. What is business as usual?
Well, I think the fossil fuel industry at large has a track record of toxic practices, environmental issues, anti-corruption issues. The OECD says that the extractive sector is the most corrupt sector on the planet. And we know that there are many other cases facing both these companies and others. Shell and Eni on criminal trial over this deal in Nigeria. Shell has said they expect to face criminal charges in the Netherlands. Eni and several of their executives are under investigation for obstruction of justice related to the OPL 25 case in Italy. They've denied wrongdoing in all these cases, but there's a long history of scandal around the fossil fuel industry, and regardless of today's result, it's vital that the industry can be held to account for their practices and that the public and especially politicians reconsider their role in public debate.
So to Global Witness, this case has to do with corruption. The question is, Eni and Shell are internationally recognized energy companies, and they may argue that they have the right to make purchases whenever and wherever they want to.
Sure. I mean, prosecutors alleged in this case that over $500 billion from Shell and Eni's payment for this deal went as bribes. Now, we don't know how judges have reached their decision and will have to wait for their ruling. It's prosecutors who brought this case, and Shell and Eni will continue having to explain their actions in this deal before other courts around the world. Two middlemen have already been found guilty for their role in this deal in a separate trial, and so we'll have to see how this court has reached such a different ruling to previous Italian judges on this case.
So do you hope that there will be an appeal, and how soon can this happen?
Certainly, we'd urge the prosecutor to explore all options for an appeal. We have to wait quite a while to see the judge's ruling and their reasoning in this case. In Italy, it's 90 days before the written ruling has to be revealed. And so we'll look forward to analysing that when we see it, and certainly will encourage the Italian authorities to pursue that. I also note that the Federal Republic of Nigeria has announced today that they will continue trying to hold Shell and Eni accountable for their role in this deal.
Barnaby, thank you very much for taking time to speak with us on Daybreak Africa.
Thank you, James.
Barnaby Pierce is a senior campaigner at Global Witness. You're speaking with us from London. Time now for Daybreak Africa Sports, and here is Samson O'Malley in Abuja, Nigeria. A very good Friday morning to you, Samson.
Good Friday morning to you too, James. We begin the sports in Tanzania, where the Tanzanian Football Federation on Thursday announced that an international friendly match between the Taifa Stars against the Kenyan's Harambee Stars has been cancelled following the death of Tanzanian President John Magufuli. The match, which was part of Taifa Stars' preparations ahead of the African Cup of Nations qualifier encounters, was scheduled to be played at the Nyayo Stadium in Nairobi on Thursday. In the first leg, Kenya won the match 2-1 against their neighbors, Tanzania. And staying with the African Cup of Nations, otherwise known as AFCON, ahead of the 2022 qualifiers later this month, many African teams will be without some of their key players during the qualifiers. This is because many of the clubs in Europe are reluctant to release their players, citing COVID-19 restrictions. The Ligue de Football Professionnel, for instance, have announced that French clubs have decided to restrict players from traveling for any international games outside of Europe. This comes after club presidents from France's top two divisions met with the LFP to discuss the upcoming international break, where they reached the decision with respect to players' safety against coronavirus. Staying with football, new Confederation of African Football president Patrice Motsepe has raised the bar for national teams in the continent by insisting one of them must win the World Cup soon. The mining billionaire made the comments in Johannesburg, South Africa, at a press conference as he set out his plans to take African football forward.
We want, during the next World Cup and also during the forthcoming World Cups, that African nations compete. And if you look at what we said in the manifesto, it's part of our plan that an African team must win the World Cup.
And now to athletics, where Kenya is not leaving anything to chance ahead of the country's participation at this year's Summer Olympics in Tokyo, Japan. Earlier this week, the National Olympic Committee of Kenya unveiled a 5-member team that will offer technical support to athletes from training to the actual competition. The National Olympic Committee of Kenya identifies several experts in the fields of nutrition, medical psychology, and conditioning that will help the team prepare as well as offer technical support for the Tokyo Games. Paul Taggart, National Olympic Committee of Kenya President.
All prepare to go for Olympics in Tokyo. There are so many things that our sportsmen might not be able to understand. The playbook that's been unveiled from IOC and that's gone all out. We don't want to do things the way we do things locally here. We take things for granted. In Japan, it is 100%. They do things 100%.
And that's it on Daybreak Africa Sports. I am Samson O'Malley in Abuja, Nigeria. It's back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Samson. Have a good weekend.
And that's it for this Friday, March 19th edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for spending this week with us. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa team, producer Nicole Beckford, reporters Peter Clotty and Ricky Stryak, as well as sports editor Samson O'Malley, along with all of our engineers, I'm James Butte in Washington, wishing you a very good weekend.
VOA brings you the best in African music on the African beat. African Beat showcases the latest and the greatest of contemporary African music, from bubu music to hip life, bonga flavor to soukous, Afrobeat to ndombolo and makosa to kwaito. The African Beat on VOA has it all. And it's happening right here, Mondays through Fridays at 09:05 and 20:05 UTC, right after the international news.